Well, I'll tell you guys, we need a 7-hour show. You know that.
Well, you're in shape for that, Marty. I don't know. Bill, you might be in shape for that, too. I don't know if I'd be able to make it or not.
You could do it, Ron. On, you're kidding? The professor.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Come on, you're a pro.
Maybe with some of that priest wine up by my side.
There you go.
Oh, goodness. All right. Well, moving through this, an exciting day of these replays. Well, Ishikawa, of course, in my opinion, the ninth inning was going to be yours. Waka had nothing, and you're going to blast them out of there. But, Morse, let's start with Morse hitting the home run off Neshek. And Ishikawa, who wasn't even on the team to start the season, hits the big home run to win the pennant.
Yeah, well, we were so happy, to get Ishii come back with us. And he really gave us a jolt. He's always been, a slick fielder and gives you a good at-bat. But, he was like in his prime when we got him back. It's just like Pablo. He went to Boston. He came back here, and he just hits. And I think Ishii was so happy to be back in San Francisco. And, the fans love him, and he has some great moments. And he had great moments in this series, like you said, the home run. But he was a good left-handed hitter for us, the whole time he was here. So it was great to get him back, a great kid. And I think what you just said about Morse, that was really, changed the whole dynamic of the eighth and ninth inning, because we had two outs, in the eighth. And they had Neshek, who was very tough on right-handed hitters. And I believe we had a lefty on deck. And, you go with Morse, he gets on base, he doesn't run very good. We had other options. I remember talking about it. And, Boach felt we wanted to go for the home run. And it's one of the few times that you send a guy up there in a big moment and with a tough matchup, and you're thinking about one swing of the bat. And, Mike, by golly, if he didn't do it, and now we tie the game, and the rest is history. But that was a great decision by Boach, and Morse came through, and just another tremendous moment where if he doesn't hit that home run, it's a different ninth inning.
Mm. Hey, Ron, I want to go back to Ishikawa a little bit. You're a defensive coach. You were one of the best coaches I've ever seen run defenses. How hard was it for you to sit down with Bruce Bochy and your staff and say, we need to put Ishikawa in left field, who never played left field? How hard was that, even though he was hitting the ball? But that's a huge, huge change for a guy that's played first base both of his career.
Yeah, no question. And, today's game, guys, they want to move them all over the field. And it was a little easier in the fact that we had Brandon Belt at first base. And he's no slouch, by no means. And we know we put him in the outfield. But, Ishii has been the veteran guy that's been around. And Belt's the everyday first baseman. So, Ishii was kind of that swing guy for us to get playing time. And we needed an outfielder. I can't remember who got hurt, but we needed a left-handed hitting outfielder. And he gave us that. And so many big moments, the one we're talking about here, but at bats. But, and he handled it well. He played a nice left field, and we had confidence in him out there. We didn't expect him to do anything fantastic, just make the routine play. And here he is in our league championship series and on in the World Series to play left field. So I think with Belt at first, it made it a little easier to put him out there.
Michael Morse, I remember when he came up with Seattle, he was a shortstop. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I know it. I know. Well, he was always tall and lanky. I saw him there with Seattle in his early years, too. And, he just got bigger and stronger, and there's no way that he could go at a shortstop by the time we had him. But, what a big moment for us. He's a great guy, and, we were lucky to have him. Again, we made some good moves to pick up the right people, and they came through.
Amazing. Amazing. All right, so now it's out to Kansas City. All right, so, Bill, what did you do during the series? Were you at Comcast? Did you go on the trip?
Yeah, I did. No, I didn't go on a trip. I was in studio with Greg, and we covered all the games. I mean, I went from the elimination game. I did 2012 and 2014, so did both the series and all the elimination of playoff games, things like that. So I was dialed in right with with you, Marty, on KNBR, and of course watching Ron in the dugout with Bruce Bochy trying to put this series to bed. And what a series it was against the Royals, who literally played just as well as the Giants leading into that World Series.
Well, I'll tell you something about Kansas City, and the game that I mentioned last week was that middle game where you guys were down, and you end up winning the game, I think 11-4, 11-5, whatever it was. But the big hits that Sandoval got hitting right-handed. Now, in those days, you know, he didn't hit right-handed that well. Now he hits right-handed a lot better. But in those days, and they brought lefties in to face him, whether it was Duffy or Finnegan, I forget who the guys they brought in, but there were big hits in that game that turned that game around. That game was a game you guys were losing after three innings.
Yeah, I know that game was a big game to win because, you know, I mean, every game's big when you're talking the playoffs because it swings so much, you know, the momentum, and then you got to go back to Kansas City. You know, fortunately for us, we're going back to Kansas City with, you know, having to win one to win the World Series, not having to win two, you know, because the pressure changes so much, or your psyche is, you feel so much better when you're going home. And that was the key, I think, obviously, when we beat St. Louis, we won two at their, well, I don't think we won two at their place. I'm sorry, Washington. We went up 2-0 on Washington.
Right.
At their place, and then came home. I mean, you're really in the driver's seat there. But, you know, back to Pablo, you're right. He wasn't a very good right-handed hitter, and we didn't have a better option, and he came through, you know, in these big moments. And you hit the nail on the head. Every time they had a chance to throw a left-hander against him, they were going to do it. And he came through hitting right-handed. And you nailed it again, Marty. He's a much better right-handed hitter now than he was earlier in his career. He swung the bat great right-handed last year, and this spring he looked good again.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, Ron, when you talked about it, you know, this is looking at every score was dominant on one side or the other. But when you went back into Kansas City, game six, you lost 10-0 and 15 hits by the Royals. I mean, they just sprung hits and galore. I mean, they were just coming right at you. 7 runs in the second inning, and it continued to add on. How was your mental game after that game going? We're going into game 7, and we just got our butts whipped.
Well, it's tough. And, you know, I had been there, Boach, the coaching staff, some of the coaching staff, we had been there before, you know, going down to Anaheim with a 3-2 lead in 2002. Yeah. And losing game 6, we had a 3-run lead. And there's no question, when you're in the visitor's park and you have to win that game to win the World Series in game 6 and you lose, all of a sudden the pressure just switches completely to you, and the home team is feeling real good about themselves. Mm-hmm. And not only did they beat us, but, you know, they kicked our butt, and now they're in Kansas City and they have Guthrie going and they're feeling real good. Now they're confident. They think for sure they're going to win the game. And I'll say this, even though we lost the game, it doesn't really matter how you lose it. Sometimes if you get your butt kicked, it's a little easier to wash off and say, hey, that's not us. Put it aside. We got one game tomorrow. All we need to do is win this game. It's a little bit easier than losing a 3-2 game. Sometimes it's a heartbreaker, and it's a little harder to get over, you know, or you had the lead and you lost it late. So I didn't think it was that big of a deal in Kansas City. And, as of course, we had the secret weapon on one day's rest, Bumgarner, loaded and ready. So we felt okay about going into the game 7.
Well, I remember I was on TV. I remember they had the show after you guys were done, Bill, after you and Greg were done. They had, was it Chronicle Live or whatever they called it?
It sure was.
Being on that night, and of course I stayed back. I didn't do the traveling because I was doing some radio, and I felt it was better to be here. And I remember getting on there, and I did research. I looked it up, and, you know, teams that had lost Game 6 and how they had bounced back even on the road in Game 7. I said, don't worry. And the big question was, I remember saying it, and Barry Tompkins was on with me, and Middlecoff, and Jim Cozumer, I think that was the crowd. But I said, don't worry. This is one game. But I said, the big question is, how were you going to use Bumgarner? And, well, what was that discussion like? Do you start him, or do you bring him in the middle? I thought my personal opinion was it's better to bring him in the middle, not to have him go five innings, but have him go where you needed him in the middle as opposed to starting the game. What was your discussion like?
Well, Bill knows, you know, when you're on one day's rest like that, and it's the seventh game of the World Series, you're like, give me the ball. And I think at that point in time, you know, cooler heads have to prevail. And, you know, we got 11 other guys on the pitching staff. And you know, before I answer that question, I think the thing that makes this World Series so amazing to me is if you look at our pitching staff, we really didn't have the pitching staff, starting pitching that we had in 10 and 12. You know, Hudson and Peavy at the end of their career. And so, you know, I thought Boach did a great job of managing the pitching staff in this game. And with this decision that you're talking about, look, you're going to start, you know, Hudson, and you're going to have a quick hook. You know, you got Bum. You know, you got Affelt. You're not going to let your starter stay out there and give up 3, 4, 5 runs because that could be the game. And, you know, in the minor leagues, I had been in that situation many times in a Game 7 must-win situation. And you need to be proactive opposed to reactive. And, you know, you start the guy you're starting, but you're not going to let him get in the trouble. So, you know, Boach and Rags and we all knew that we were going to go to our bullets and the best guys that we had and manage this thing, not like it's a regular season game. You know, you want to keep your lesser pitchers on the staff out of it and go with the best guys you can. But none of us imagined that Bum was going to go the rest of the game, as you said. But we knew he was going to be in that game after Affelt and see how long he could go.
You know, Ron, one of the big names out of that bullpen that we never talk about is Petit. He was the middle guy. Yeah. He was the long guy. He was the guy out there all the time, and he played a big part in Game 7, too. I'm just looking at the box score. But he pitched 3 scoreless innings in Game 4, and then you talk about going back all the way to the Washington game. He was on that extra inning game. He probably threw 5, 6 innings. And here was a guy that was thrown in so many different situations, middle, long, and he dominated. And I still think he was one of those unsung heroes also that nobody talks about.
You know, Bill, I'm glad you brought him up because I wanted to mention that as well, that he won 2 games in that Washington series. And at 18 in the game, he may have went, I don't know, 6. I don't know. Did he go 5? It
I
felt like
six.
He went a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, that was one of the most grueling games I've ever been involved with because you're on the road and you're in a tie game. You know, it's different than when you're at home in extra innings because you always have the last at bat. But when you're on the road, you got to worry about the no doubles, you know, 1 run and you're going home. And Petit, he just kept going and going. You know,
weather,
he won
Ron,
that game for us.
As that game went on, it got colder and colder. It had to have been about 30 or 40 degrees when that game ended.
Yeah, I remember my brother drove down with his son to watch that game. Little did they know they were going to be in the freezing cold and watch 2 games that night. And, yeah, but no, Petit did a tremendous job there, the 2 games. And you said he was a stabilizer for us in that bullpen. And he did it. We don't win it without him, the job that he did through this whole playoff series. Yeah.
Boy, exciting. Exciting. This is better than the game talking about. Really. It's terrific. 2 things to talk about. 1, we didn't talk about last week, and we could work it in this week, because the 9th inning gets crazy. And the ball's kicked around, and here comes Alex Gordon. And, well, you got to be thinking, oh, this can't happen. And then here's Perez. And it also reminded me, because the relay was, you know, dead on, the relay that got Fielder at the plate. We didn't talk about that in the Detroit series. So let's talk about both of those plays.
Yeah. Well, you know, that in the Detroit series, that was – I think it was Game 1, was it not?
And it was.
That really changed. That changed the whole inning because there was 1 out, and they were aggressive there, and they sent Fielder home, and Scudero, I can't remember the left fielder who threw it to him, but you know, you have 2 guys lined up there. You have the shortstop, and the second baseman comes all the way over as a trail guy, and if you miss the first guy, the second baseman standing there, and thank goodness he hustled his butt over there because it went over Crawford's head. He catches the ball, and just like turning a double play, makes a tremendous relay throw right on the money, and he's out. I mean, look, if they would have had second and third with one out, that changes the whole inning and changes the game in a lot of respects. One thing we've did in most of these games, or in game sevens, whether it's Pittsburgh or the one we're talking about in Kansas City, we didn't get down a lot in these games. We weren't down by more than a run if we got down. You play from a position of a lead, and you feel a lot better when you're doing that, when you're down by a few runs. So that relay changed the moment, no question about it.
So let's go to the ninth inning in Kansas City with two out. What happens?
Well, you know, I wouldn't have had a problem if he sent him there because, you know, Perez was kicking around that ball in the outfield, and Gordon's coming around. I know everybody, and Mike Gersel, I think that's how you pronounce it, Jurcich. Anyways, he's been asked about that his whole life, about why he didn't send Gordon home. And it's kind of defined. He's been a great third base coach, and he just retired, by the way, and did a great job for him. But he made the right decision. He had no chance to score unless Crawford makes a bad throw. And when you're losing like that, and I know Bumgarner's on the mound, but my goodness, he's thrown a lot of pitches. He's already overextended, and they got Perez coming up, one of their best hitters on that club, a righty who could take the ball out of the ballpark. And, you know, it wasn't a 50-50. If Crawford just makes his normal throw, it's 80-20 that guy is going to score. The thing that scared me the most, Marty, was the throw-in from the outfield that it short-hopped Crawford. That was my biggest fear. I saw that ball starting to bounce, and my heart dropped into my stomach, and I was like, please don't mishandle the relay. There's no way he could have scored because where he was at. But if they mishandle that relay, they get a cheap run, and it's a different World Series.
Hey, Ron, let me go back before that when Gregor Blanco misplayed the ball. In a situation like that, he wholeheartedly came in, stuttered, and then he came in again. I keep going back to the defensive coach here. That's one of the things you're taught not to do. Why do you think he did that?
Yeah, well, he wanted to make a play, and that's usually what happens. You know, guys try to do too much, but we got a one-run lead in that situation with two outs. He's got to keep that ball in front of him. I mean, he very easily could have kept that to a single, and now we play in no doubles, and they need two more hits to score a run other than a home run, and that's the way you want to play that inning. So that was a mental mistake on his part. He thought he could catch it, and he got caught in between, and it was just a bad time to get caught in between and make that mistake. But thank goodness we had Bum on the mound.
Yeah,
fabulous. Well, I tell you, these 3 weeks of going through these games, it's almost like I'm drenched. I mean, you know, going through, I mean, there's so many innings.
You know what, Marty? It's some of the key points of the game that you don't get to discuss with Ron, who I keep talking, defensive specialist, the professor. But, you know, just like this Blanco thing, I was saying it in studio. Why are you coming in? You got to play that back. There's two outs. And I can see Greg Papa throwing his pen across the table asking the same thing, you know, And those are the things as fans do. You know, you're saying, hey, why are you coming? It's not a game catch. You got the lead. You got two outs. And it was a good example. It was a mental mistake. And sometimes outfielders, infielders, you're just caught in the moment, and you can try to be that star. Now you go back to Kane's game with the perfect game. Blanco does make the great catch. So, I mean, there's good times and bad times. But at that time, I thought he was over-aggressive.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Hey, we lost one of the great Hall of Famers this week, Mr. Tiger, Al Kaline. And Bill, I know he's one of your favorite players growing up, and, whoa, you had tremendous respect for him. Raf dug into our archives, and we have about a two-and-a-half-minute little interview I did one day with Al Kaline that I thought I'd like to play and then get you guys' comments about Al Kaline. So let's sit back and relax and listen here just for about 2.5 minutes to me. Years ago, my voice is a little different than chatting with Al Kaline. Marty Lurie with Al Kaline. And Al, it's September 24th, 1974. A wonderful moment for you. Your 3,000th hit in your hometown of Baltimore.
Yes, it was a big day for me. I had wanted to get 3,000 hits in Detroit, but the ball club, the official said, hey, no, go get it any place you can. And, of course, if I couldn't get it in Detroit, then Baltimore would be the place where I would like to get it because that's my hometown.
Well, Dave McNally's the pitcher and the Orioles the opponent. You're sitting on 2999. Tell me about it.
Well, you know, he threw me a little breaking ball, hit it down a right field line for a double. But tell you a story that goes to that. Dave called me in spring training and asked me if I knew anybody at Ford Motor Company because him and his brother wanted to buy a Ford dealership in a small town next to where he lived. So I got in touch with Lee Iacocca, who was a good friend of mine, and eventually they got back to him. And to make the story very short, they were able to purchase a Ford dealership. And when he called me in April to thank me, he says, and by the way, I dreamt that you got your 3,000 hit off of me, and that's exactly the way it worked out.
Boy, what a story, but a great, great moment for you. You break in 1953. When you break in at that moment, first home run off Dave Hoskins of Cleveland. Do you ever think 3,000 was anywhere remotely out there?
No, back in those
still
days.
Difficulties. You guys there?
Yep. Yeah, we're here.
He's having some technical difficulties with this, so... It's live radio. What can I tell you? But it was me chatting with Al Kaline. So the point was, tremendous guy. Just couldn't be nicer to everybody. And I know Ray Fossey's going to comment on him later. But, Bill, he was one of your favorites. And your thoughts on Al Kaline?
Well, he really was the one that made me play baseball. I mean, I grew up in Toledo, and the Tigers were right and up north. And I gravitated to Al Kaline, and he was my guy. I watched him just like people watch Barry Bonds here or Willie Mays. He was my idol. And I watched every movement, everything he did in right field. And he was a fantastic defensive player, and people just don't understand it, making 10 gold gloves. And the premier thing that everybody talks about is he left a high school in Baltimore and went right to the big leagues. That's just unheard of. A guy that's just on and off the field, one of the greatest baseball players, human, Mr. Tiger. I got to meet him. I got to talk to him, shake his hand, take pictures. I was in awe of him when I first met him, and I was in the big leagues 5 years at that time, and he was just that guy for me. Growing up, watching him on my black and white TV in Toledo, everything he did from playing right field to hitting balls in the gap, home run hitter, 399 career. I remember him hitting his 3,000 hit off Dave McNally. He was a DH toward the end of his career. But, you know, when you look at a Hall of Famer, he fills the resume so well. 18 All-Stars, I think, a World Series champion, 68 against the Cardinals. Just so many things about him I imitated, from the backyard playing stick ball. I was the Al Kaline. I had number 6 on my back. I had the same batting stance. You imitated him. And I say this to this day. He was the guy that got me hooked on baseball, and he was the man that made me fall in love with baseball. And I miss him. He's a good man, and Major League Baseball is missing a great Hall of Famer right now.
Well, you got to hear a little bit of the interview. I sent it to you. I know we couldn't play it on the air. It'll be on the website. But you got to hear Al Kaline's voice. What'd you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, Bill summed him up. It's really neat to hear Bill talk about him because he was up in that area, and, you know, it's like you gravitate. Me, it was the Red Sox and Carl Yastrzemski. Now we have, you know, mm-hmm. we have Mike, his grandson, on our team, which is really cool for me just to see the moments we had in Boston. But the Al Kaline, I did hear the interview, and first off, I'd say, that, you know, it's the name, Al Kaline. I mean, I wasn't around the American League. I've been in the National League my whole life, but I knew who Al Kaline was and the numbers that he had. And what really struck me about that interview was two things. The first thing was he was such a tremendous hitter, but how humble he was. And that really stuck with me. And the one thing he said about his defensive coach, and I can't remember the name of the coach, but we all know he was a great hitter, but he said as an outfielder, you know, he always wanted to be the best he could because his coach told him, you're going to go into slumps, you know, at the plate. You're going to have good days and bad days. But you never should have a bad day on defense. You need to not go into a slump defensively. So he worked awfully hard, which you don't hear about because we think of him as being such a great hitter, on his defense. And the other thing about hitting was the thing that he said in that interview that your listeners will hear. He talked about hitting the ball back up the middle. And I can't tell you how many of players, great players, whether it was Pete Rose, Will Clark was just talking about it the other day when I was speaking to him, Tony Gwynn. Everybody's mm-hmm. approach was to hit the ball back up the middle, even these home run hitters. And the thing about it was, is if you're a little bit early as a left-hander, you know, you pull it, the ball's in the right field, and it might be a homer. If you're a little late, the ball's in the left field. So the approach was hit the back ball back through the middle, and you wouldn't think that of a big home run hitter. You would think he's trying to pull everything. So those two things really struck me, and with him being so humble in that interview.
Yeah, he was a very nice man. The little twist in the interview, and fans, you'll enjoy it when Raf gets it on the website, of Dave McNally. Dave McNally yeah. pitched for the Orioles, and that was his friend. And Dave McNally called Al in spring training and said that Dave and his brother-in-law wanted to get a Ford dealership in, I think Dave was from Montana, Billings, Montana, if I'm not mistaken. And Al said, oh, I'll call Lee Iacocca from Ford. And he put together, he got the dealership for Dave McNally and his brother-in-law, and they put that together, the Ford dealership. And McNally said, I had a dream that you got your 3,000th hit off me. This is in spring training. And it took K-Line a while to get that 3,000th hit. It wasn't that simple. And he bounced it through the right side against Dave McNally of mm-hmm. the Orioles. How about that? Well, remember that part of the story?
I sure do. I mean, that's a great story. I mean, just to have that come to fruition like that. And what's even more impressive that you just call up Lee Iacocca anytime you want and get yourself a, you know, an inside move on a Ford. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, I told Marty toward the end of this week, I had read maybe 18 articles on him when he passed from all different type of writers from America, all over United States, from the Detroit Free Press to the Hall of Fame. And one of the things that stood out with me was Henry Aaron. Henry Aaron called Al Kaline the best right fielder he ever saw because he could go into that right center gap and catch that ball over his right shoulder. And he played Tiger Stadium so well, and I'm sure both of you remember how right field, the upper deck stood out a little bit farther out, and he'd go right to the wall, and it seemed like he'd catch the ball over the fence so many times. And there was a play where he ran into Jim Northrup in center field, and Willie Horton came over to him in right center field, and he was turning blue, and Willie Horton literally saved his life. And they became best of friends and really good people in Detroit, and really served the Tigers well, both of them. And it really hurt Willie in a couple of things that he said in a couple articles from the Free Press. He said, I lost my best friend. Even though we were different colors, we were good people to each other. And I really believe that.
What a great story. Great story. Yeah. Boy, this was fun, guys. This there's nothing better. I must tell you. I look forward to Saturday night. You know that?
Yeah, it'd
Marty,
be great.
Hey, we'll studio next week.
Well, we'll see where baseball goes, guys. You know, let's see. All you can do is a day at a time. And, you know, stay in and observe the guidelines, and it's making a difference. It's making a difference. And, whoa, actually, you got me enthusiastic a little bit about the plan. I wasn't that enthusiastic about it. Maybe this is something that could be worked out if things get better over the summer. So you convinced me. You made a good argument tonight.
Yeah. Well, good. I mean, I'm not a lawyer by trade, but I just looking at the details of it, I think, you know, there's so many obstacles for us to get back playing and be traveling around the country. And, you know, I mean, sitting in the stands is not obviously something I think that would happen. But testing is the key. I think testing is going to be real important for our country to get people back at work and things moving again. So I think if they want baseball and play more games, you know, this is probably the best case scenario at this point in time.
All right.
I'm just glad both sides are talking. You know, I'm just glad baseball, the executives, baseball ops, the players union, I think that is a key point here, and getting both sides to recognize what they want and how to do testing and how to be safe. And I think that's the whole key here in the aspect of any sport coming back, is you want to protect everybody, not just the players, everybody affiliated with the game. And I think that's one thing they're really taking short strides to do, and let's hope it continues as the weeks come prosperous for us.
I hope so. Well, before we let you go, River Islands, always like to mention that with you. They have the virtual welcome center online, riverislands.com. They've got the 40 floor plans, more than 100 different exterior elevations. And the school, and there's a lot of issues about schools, whether schools will open before the end of the year, and it looks like in California they won't. But over at River Islands, the Tech Academy is hosting live online classrooms for real-time personal instructions. So even with all this going on, the students can interact with their teachers and classmates daily from the safety of their homes. All that woe at riverislands.com. So I know you appreciate it, and I know you like to make a comment on it.
Yeah, well, I think we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. I mean, this is a new community. I mean, they've been, you know, building this for years, but there's still, you know, a lot of homes available, and they keep expanding. But to have the facilities that they have, you know, the bocce ball and the baseball stadium, the soccer fields, the walking trails, their location here to the Bay Area. But the schools, I think, is a tremendous thing. I mean, a lot of schools are trying to figure out, you know, how to do their classes online and get the information to the students, and they're on the cutting edge with this. So a lot of pluses out there, and with the weather warming up, you know, it won't be long, Marty. You'll be out there in a kayak or on a paddleboard.
All right, look, these are all pleasant thoughts. You know, we just have to keep positive thoughts. So we'll end on that one. Me in a kayak. Okay, we'll end on that. Well, have a good night. Take care of yourself.
Right. Thank you, guys. Good seeing being with you guys.
All right. That is our third base coach, Ron Woese. Bill,
from
hang in there.
Bubble boy to kayak, Marty. Bubble boy to kayak.
This has been quite a night. It's been quite a night for me. Okay. I'm spending a lot of time in Arizona. Let me tell you, I'm starting to miss the Bay Area a lot, and I mean that. All right. Bill, stay with us. Bruce Jenkins is up next right here in the sports.
All right, great.
Talking Baseball with Marty Lurie on KNBR 104.5 and 680, the sports leader.